H1N1 hits close to home. One Terp Weekly Edition reporters close encounter with the swine flu.
Its goal is to promote unity on campus, but the recent controversy surrounding the Office of Equity and Diversity is creating a deep divide among students.
It's been 1 year since President Obama was elected. One Terp Weekly Edition reporter samples student opinion of his performance so far.
And for this week's sports update, we turn to the voice of Maryland Athletics.
Terp Weekly Edition starts now.
This is Terp Weekly Edition, a look at the issues and news in and around the University of Maryland College Park. Terp Weekly Edition is produced by students of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism in cooperation with WMUC Radio.
Welcome to Terp Weekly Edition. I'm Michael O'Neill.
And I'm Caitlin O'Brien. In an attempt to save dollars and cents in a rough economy, some academic programs, which focus on widely diverse segments of society, may be looking at ways to make their programs more efficient. Michael O'Neill tells us how these very different areas of study could wind up united as one academic unit.
You have probably heard the saying that apples and oranges don't mix. But does the same warning apply when you're talking about academic programs at a university? We may soon find out, as administrators of the African American, LGBT, American Studies, and Women's Studies programs consider combining into a single academic unit. Some officials like the idea of consolidation. They believe sharing staff and resources would result in greater efficiency. Supporters also expect the plan would provide a greater sense of stability while at the same time maintaining the unique aspects of each department. But I spoke with two faculty members who oppose the plan. They feel it would damage the four departments' distinct focuses. Student advisor Marcy Deloach of the African American Studies Department believes a merger would harm her department's hard work of promoting diversity.
I think it would hurt the department because we're all very distinct disciplines. This department was not something that was conceptualized when the university was formed. This was a department that had to fight to be here. And if our part of the university's plan is putting diversity at the forefront, this would really take away from that.
Deloach also worries about other important aspects of the program, such as research in areas where professors have special expertise. Even faculty members who teach and conduct this research could find themselves without a job. For Deloach, losing the core of her department would be devastating.
There's so many things that come into play that we're going to lose, and why would you want to take something that's so fundamentally historically to this country and just dump it with a bunch of other things who are distinct in their own right?
Another faculty member, this one from the Women's Studies Department, who did not want to be identified, echoed similar concerns.
For my personal opinion, I don't think this consolidation is going to help Women's Studies because it does not have, the way I see it, it does not have intellectual justification.
My colleague Shauna Stewart reports on the possible elimination of another key diversity program that is sparking outrage from students.
I believe it says something how in 1 week, ideologically, you can speak on a diversity plan and pushing diversity, and then one of the men leading diversity in this campus is shut out of the admin that determines how diversity will be the following year.
Thursday evening, students packed into Nibiru Cultural Center. When every chair was filled, students lined the walls, sat on the floor, and crowded in the cold around speakers outside. But the small building, often the place for happy events like Juke Joint and Gospel Happy Hour, wasn't filled with the usual jovial sounds of students performing. This was an emergency meeting, called in response to the termination of Dr. Cordell Black. This week, students learned that Black, the former provost of diversity, had been released from his position. In this same week, students also learned about a proposed merger of four diversity programs in arts and humanities. Under this merger, African American, Women's, American, and LGBT studies would consolidate into a new academic unit, sharing resources and staff. This news, combined with the removal of Dr. Black, had both students and some faculty on edge.
Dr. Black is an individual that cannot be replaced. And so if he is removed, even though he says that the function of Nibiru or the Office of Multi-Ethnic Education or LGBT is not going to be changed in terms of structure, it will be changed. When you remove the head of these organizations, it will be impacted. I promise you, it will be impacted, and the reverberations will be felt throughout this campus.
I'm a third year going into my fourth year professor here, and I don't have tenure. For those of you who don't know what tenure is about getting here permanency at the University of Maryland after a period of 6 or 7 years, and then your job is secure for life. I am sacrificing that right now and putting that in jeopardy by just even standing up here speaking. So I would hope.
Black State Newman for Writing, the Provost of Academic Affairs, said he was terminating Black because of the university budget cuts. Black, who planned to retire in 2 years, said this reason left him feeling betrayed.
He had in his mind that he wanted somebody else. I believe that. He's never said it to me, and that's why I feel betrayed. Because I can take somebody saying, well, you know, Cordell, you've outlived your usefulness. I may not agree with him, but tell me, but don't tell me because it's a budget crisis. It's very convenient to say the budget is the reason I am asking you to step down, but it's more than a budget, so that's it.
Black is a tenured professor. While he will no longer be able to serve as provost of diversity, he will still be able to teach French literature at Maryland. Despite his tenure, Black says losing his position as diversity provost means he will also lose his voice in issues of diversity at UMD.
I have had a consistently strong voice, unfaltering and determined that there be fair representation and at all levels, administration, faculty, graduate student body. If you don't find somebody, and there are people out there who will fight for those things, then this university will feel the shrinkage of the very thing they claim is a core value, and that's diversity.
While students gathered in Nibiru to speak out against threats to diversity, English and Women's Studies major Elizabeth Cerezo had a different plan in mind.
I'll tell you this much. I'm going to be in front of admin at 12 o'clock tomorrow. Yes, I'll be there at 12 o'clock tomorrow, waiting for you to show up, waiting for you to walk out of your class, and when your professors say, "What? You can't walk out of here, you're going to get a say it's a medical emergency, and when they say what it is, say it's the human condition. Tell them it's the student condition. Tell them it's time. Tell them they need to walk out of your classes. Tell them it's time. It's time to take back our education."
And at 12 o'clock on Thursday afternoon, over 100 students gathered in an amphitheater at Nimbiru Cultural Center to march to the administration building.
We're not going to like take this laying down that we really, you know, care for our faculty and staff. And when, you know, you do something that is going to hurt us in the long run, that we're just not going to take it. Like, we're going to show you how we feel about what you're doing behind our backs.
I'm going to stand there and make sure that the two years he wanted, he gets. He retires in 2 years. He doesn't get terminated in 2 years. And that's what it was really about. 12 o'clock noon was to see how much the students can really come together and show this university who's really boss.
Armed with bullhorns and holding colorful signs saying "Bring Black Back," the students marched up the steps of the amphitheater, down the sidewalk next to Jimenez Hall, and through the middle of the mall, until they stopped right on the steps of the main administration building.
Today, instead of rushing inside the administration building, instead of rushing in today, what we've got is we've got people going around with pieces of paper and markers. What we want you to do is write your feeling, write why you're here. Why did you come out? And then we're going to tape them all over that building. Let them know whose building it is. Whose school is this? Whose school is this? Whose school is this?
We gather here today in response to the termination of Dr. Cordell Black. a man who dedicated all he could to support and advocate for anyone who identified as a minority, whether it be by race, gender, or sexual orientation. We gather here today in response to the alleged budget crisis that the administration uses to buttress the removal of Dr. Black from his position. The same budget crisis that allowed for $250,000 to be spent rebranding the school, and the same budget crisis that allows for millions of dollars in flowers year after year.
A provost Nerman Favardin did not come out of administration to address the student protesters. He did meet with student leaders that afternoon to talk about Black, the university budget, and the university's commitment to diversity. Amber Simmons, president of the Black Student Union, was one of those leaders.
He talked about Dr. Black and that decision. He basically went over how difficult it was. He did ask that we put ourselves in his shoes, coming from his perspective, like, you make a decision, and before you get a chance to show that your decision is going to be carried out correctly, you have hundreds of students outside protesting. So from his point of view, he wants a chance to prove himself.
SGA President Steve Wickman was also in the meeting. He says while Favardin did speak about Dr. Black, he gave different reasons for his termination.
He did give budgetary reasons. There was a personnel and budget issue, but when you look at the bottom line of the budget, for the reason of a budget cut, there's no cut being made.
When the students left the protest that afternoon, there were no promises to reinstate Black. But the students will keep organizing to ensure that diversity will not stop on the steps of administration. From the administration building, this is Shauna Stewart for Chirp Weekly Edition.
Last week marked 1 year since Barack Obama's election, which was, by most anyone's account, a momentous and historic event. But in the 12 months since he was elected, much has changed, and the country faces enormous challenges both at home and overseas. So how is the president doing? You've probably heard results of national polls on Mr. Obama's popularity, but we wanted to bring things closer to home. So TERT Weekly Edition's Caitlin O'Brien took a walk around campus to take the pulse of student opinion.
When Barack Obama was elected, he became the first African-American president, winning a greater share of the popular vote, 53%, than any other non-incumbent president since Dwight Eisenhower. His election was, by most any account, an exciting and important event. But now, 12 months have gone by, and the public's perception of the president is bound to have changed. Polls show that support for the president has dipped, but how do college students, who voted in 2008 in the largest number since 1972, feel the president is doing now? Senior government and politics major Sarah Michaloski worked for Hillary Clinton during her presidential campaign. But after Barack Obama beat Clinton for the Democratic nomination, Michaloski switched her support to Obama.
If I had to say what I think of Obama 1 year after his inauguration into office, I would say that he has some good ideas. All the background knowledge he's trying to gain on different countries and addressing a country when there's an issue instead of like letting it go in the air or taking it to like an institution like WTO or something where no like judiciary will serve any purpose. He has ideas, but he just needs to implement them in my mind. Like go to different countries like Iran and the Middle Easterns and China and address the problems that you need. I think that he has the initiative to do that. He just has to go through with his plan a little bit better. And also with his health care policies, I'd say he also has all the right ideas. I just haven't seen any real effects or any, like, there obviously isn't any research yet on what his ideas are doing and what effect they have and how they benefit our, like, society. But hopefully his good ideas are...
There are many issues that could affect student support, or lack of, for Obama. Historically, popular president support rates drop after their first year. Art major Marie Wilkerson has been a supporter of President Obama since he was a senator.
A year ago, I actually did vote for Obama. I was happy with that decision. However, I'm not the most politically involved person. On the same note, though, it does irritate me to hear people say negative things about Obama, and when I ask further, they're completely unfounded.
For college students, there may be different issues that could affect their views on the president's performance. Gay marriage and healthcare are two examples where there's been much controversy, but no resolution. President Obama's legacy is still to be determined, With more than 3 years left in his term, there's much that can be done. But at this point, a year after his election, the view from the University of Maryland campus is mixed. For TERP Weekly Edition, I'm Caitlin O'Brien.
Coming up on TERP Weekly Edition, our weekly update on the swine flu.
Stay tuned.
This is TERP Weekly Edition. I'm Michael O'Neill.
And I'm Caitlin O'Brien. We've all heard the horror stories about the swine flu, but what would you do if it happened to you? Here's a first-hand account of what happens when the swine flu hits home.
Earlier this month, President Obama declared the swine flu a national emergency. His advice? To get vaccinated as quickly as possible. But what if the vaccine isn't available? That's a problem that many students may soon be facing. The University of Maryland has no H1N1 vaccines available and is not expecting any to arrive until mid-November. And even then, students won't be guaranteed access to the vaccine, as University Health Center Director Dr. Saccharid Bodison explains.
And so I don't anticipate that we'll get a full complement of vaccine adequate for our population, but we hope to be able to give it to most of our high-risk individuals, our healthcare workers, first responder types initially, and then hopefully, you know, we'll get some additional doses.
Given the uncertainty about when the H1N1 vaccine will become available on campus, students should not count on it as their main source of virus protection. Dr. Bodison gave advice on how we can keep ourselves flu-free until the vaccine is accessible.
I think that it's important that students do things that enhance their own immune system, because we don't really have good treatments for viral infections, and so anything that will improve the immune system so that it can fight off infection would be important. So, you know, adequate amount of sleep, eating nutritiously, try and keep stress to a minimum are all things that are important.
For those who have battled the horrific swine flu, the vaccine can't come soon enough. My younger sister, Patrice, who was a freshman at Loyola University in Baltimore, became infected with the virus after an outbreak in her residence hall.
I didn't know what was happening to me when I got the swine flu. I just started feeling extremely sick in the middle of the day. It kind of hit me out of nowhere. I went to my school's health center as quickly as I could, and before I knew it, they were sending me home to Pennsylvania with the swine flu.
Loyola has a strict swine flu policy, which requires infected students to leave campus immediately in order to prevent an outbreak. Such drastic action became necessary after hundreds of students were diagnosed with the virus. Patrice believes that the spread can be stopped as long as students commit to healthy habits.
I think people should take all the steps necessary to prevent themselves from getting swine flu. I think they should wash their hands and use antibacterial soaps and creams and go to the doctor as soon as they start feeling symptoms, just because the swine flu does spread really fast and we don't want it to reach the high number of cases that it did earlier in the year.
The number of daily diagnosed cases of the swine flu at the University of Maryland Health Center recently dropped to its lowest rate since the start of the semester. Dr. Bodison stressed that students should not view this news as a reason to lower their guard, especially at the start of the flu season.
Well, they need to continue to worry. If they listen to the media at all, they'll know that there is significant and serious incidence of swine flu still occurring, with deaths occurring even in the state of Maryland. So it would be naive of them not to continue good practices to try and prevent the infection and to not consider getting the vaccine when it's available.
Patrice also fears for students who wrongly believe that the threat of getting the H1N1 virus is now gone.
My best advice is that everyone gets the vaccine for swine flu, especially college students and people living in close quarters with other people. I just think that it's worth it to be safe.
In College Park, I'm Kara Crawford for TERP Weekly Edition.
TERP, turned NFL star Madu Williams, is using his athletic success to make a global impact. The 28-year-old, now playing his sixth season for the Minnesota Vikings, returned to College Park to announce a new university center focused on global health issues. He made a generous donation of $2 million to the Maryland School of Public Health to create the Center for Global Health Initiatives. It will focus on health problems in Williams' two homes, his native Sierra Leone and Prince George's County, where he moved when he was 9. Robert Gold, dean of the Maryland School of Public Health,
said he and William spent last year discussing how the football pro could help the community. He now has high hopes for the new initiative.
Well, I'm hoping that it will produce a real measurable increase in quality of life and longevity and health in both Prince George's County and Sierra Leone.
The effects of a slumping economy extend well beyond the working world. Students are also feeling the pinch because of declining financial aid or simply because their own family budget issues mean college is no longer affordable. As a result, retention rates have dropped. The Diamondback reports an 8% decline in the number of returning sophomores compared to last year. It's the first drop since 2005. The university's retention rate is still far above the national average, but the drop could raise yellow flags for students who rely on financial aid.
New incentives are in the works to encourage carpooling. The University Department of Transportation Services is introducing a new carpool program to be implemented in the spring. In addition to an online database, which will make it easier for commuters to seek out fellow carpool members, DOTS will offer a 25% discount on carpool permits, $128 per semester, $213 for a year, and carpoolers will have greater flexibility in where they park. Rather than being limited to just one lot, under the new plan, any lot where a member of the carpool has a permit will be open to the carpooling group.
Last week, more than 1,400 College Park residents made their way to the polls for Tuesday's District 4 elections, and most incumbents were happy with the results. Only two council members lost their re-election bids. One of them, Councilwoman Mary Cook, lost to a 24-year-old Maryland grad student, Marcus Afazalis. And we'll take an in-depth look at Maryland sports from someone in the know.
This is Terp Weekly Edition. I'm Caitlin O'Brien.
And I'm Michael O'Neill.
Student entertainment events may have found the key to selling concert tickets. Just invite musician Girl Talk to the university. Students made a mad dash to Hoff Theater to buy tickets. Terp Weekly Edition's Allie Prout reports from the inside in a madhouse of music, mashups, and mayhem.
It's Friday night, and with the help of student entertainment events, more commonly known as C, I get to experience the Girl Talk concert from the inside. Doors opened at 8, I arrived at 7, and eager students were already lining up outside Cold Fieldhouse's doors. Before those hordes of students hurried in, fantastic stage lights whirled around a mammoth, eerily quiet stadium. And back behind stage, C directors and volunteers were cracking open glow stick necklaces and bracelets for students that lit up the arena when the lights went down and DJ Greg Gillis jumped onto stage. Gillis, better known by his stage name Girl Talk, is a master of mashups, mixing together popular songs with booming bass lines and beats. From atop the stairs of Cole, a sea of students swayed together in unison in the crowd that formed on the floor. By the end of the concert, giant balls, streamers, and confetti had rained down on the crowd. And afterwards, students welcomed the cold air outside after over an hour of crazed dancing inspired by musical mastermind Girl Talk. At Cole Fieldhouse, I'm Allie Prout for Terp Weekly Edition.
Since you last heard from us, students have seen the loyalty policy for basketball tickets change twice. Just over a week ago, the athletic department announced that students arriving 60 to 90 minutes before tip-off at home basketball games would receive one additional loyalty point. But this prompted quick response for many who felt the new policy would encourage students to show up, scan their ticket, then leave. Apparently, the athletic department took note of the response, and a few days later announced they would revert to the old loyalty policy.
He's been the voice of Terp basketball and football for more than 30 years, and he's a recent inductee into the university's Athletic Hall of Fame. Broadcaster Johnny Holiday sat down with Terp Weekly Edition's Matt Moderno for an inside look at Terrapin sports.
What better way to get an insightful perspective on the Maryland basketball team than to speak to someone who has a front row seat for every game? That man is longtime Terps broadcaster Johnny Holiday. Our interview kicked off with Holiday providing his general thoughts on this year's team.
Vasquez, Hayes, Milbourne, Tucker, Bowie, I mean, all those guys. I mean, they're terrific. This could be one of his better teams. But if you look at the conference, Carolina is loaded. Everybody else, it's kind of like up for grabs. Duke is not going to be as strong as they were, although they got Singler back. Florida State. I mean, there's like 10 teams, really, of the 12 that have got a legitimate shot to go to the NCAA. And so does this team could win 20, 23, 24, 25 games this year.
He continued by talking about the caliber of the returning players.
I mean, how'd you like to have Bowie and Mosley and Vasquez and Hayes, and even if need be, Tucker can always go in the backcourt. You're so deep. You only lose one guy in Dave Neal, which was a big loss. I mean, more than people think.
I asked Holiday which player he thought would make a much greater impact this season.
Sean Mosley. I mean, somebody brought up Mosley today at this breakfast we just did, and he said, if I'm at a foxhole, he is my bodyguard. And he's only a sophomore. And he told me at media day, we did a quick little interview, and he said, I said, this team's got a chance to be pretty good. He said, yep. He said, if some of the younger guys, he said, I'm going to tell these freshmen, you know, the party's over, okay, that you got to do this, this, and this to be successful here, and I'll make sure. And he's looking at me like, I said, hey, don't look at me like that. You know, I mean, he's dedicated to have himself a great year. He's a terrific kid, too.
And what about those freshmen?
The two freshmen are going to be outstanding. You know, Williams and Pageant, they got a little taste of the action the other night. And if you look back where Dupree was there last year, he just was out of his league. You know, and both these guys can do so much more.
The Terps will be tested early on as they have a few marquee teams on their non-conference schedule.
You've got to go to Maui. That's the strongest field of any preseason tournament. You'll probably wind up facing Gonzaga in the championship game if you beat Chaminade. And then you probably have Cincinnati for the second game. And you'll see Lance Stevenson, you know, who couldn't get in here. Gary didn't want him here. So we'll see how good he is, you know. And you got Villanova here. And then you got up in Indiana for the ACC Big Ten Challenge. So it's going to be interesting before you get to conference play.
To be successful, the Terps will have to rely heavily on senior guard Grievous Vasquez again this season. Vasquez is a player who some have mixed feelings about. Holiday, however, is not one of those people.
I think if we had 10 more like him, it'd be nice. He only knows how to play, and that's all out. I mean, I remember last year when he got on some of the fans who got on him. He gave it right back to him. You know, you probably shouldn't do that, and I think Gary talked to him about that. But I don't think anybody, you know, loves the game more than this guy. And nobody... I think he plays up to the competition, too. The better the competition, the better he plays.
Holiday also provided a funny anecdote about the softer side of the fiery guard.
He did a thing in his freshman year. We have the players record little drop-ins that we use. And so I wrote something for him, and he says, you know, my English is not that good. I said, well, you take your time. You know, you can read this. So he read it, and it was okay. And I said, do you want to say something in Spanish? He said, yeah. I said, okay, because, you know, there's some people out there that speak Spanish, so he does something. I don't know what he's saying. So afterwards, we played it on the air, and after the game, I said, what did you say? And he said, I wanted to say hello to my mother and father listening in Caracas and to send money. I said, that's what you said? Yeah. I said, okay, because I thought maybe he was, I mean, that's the kind of humor he's got, you know. And then then the next week he says to me, can I redo that promo for you because I forgot to mention my brother. He said, my mother and father are listening, and my brother calls me and says, what am I, chopped liver? You don't mention me? I said, sure, you can redo it. So he redid the whole thing again.
I closed by asking if we would ever see Maryland make the jump to becoming a top-tier program, the way it appeared to be headed after winning the national championship.
I would think so. I think it's on the move now that he's already got a terrific recruiting class for next year. You know, a couple of blue chippers, the kid from Montrose Christian. You lose three guys off this team. I mean, three good ones, Vasquez, Hayes, and Milbourne. But I think now you're starting to see the recruiting is there like it used to be. Kids want to come here. It's tougher to get them in school. You know, it used to be academically many years ago, wasn't that tough to get into Maryland. Now it's pretty tough. And the athletes have got to, you know, abide by the same rules everybody else does. You got to do the work. But I can slowly see it changing a little bit. Getting to the NCAA last year, which I thought was one of his better coaching jobs for what he had, where they were, and they had to win those games in the ACC tournament, and they won it. You had to win one in the NCAA, and they won the game in the NCAA. So I think good things are ahead, real good things.
With special thanks to Johnny Holiday for Terp Weekly Edition, I'm Matt Moderno.
Veterans Day is November 11th, and to honor the university's faculty, staff, and student veterans, an annual event will be held at 3 p.m. in the Memorial Chapel. Several students who have been working on a memorial book will present some of their findings. Selected veterans will speak, and President Dan Moat will open the ceremony. The University ROTC unit will also hold a vigil from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. outside the chapel.
Take a look at the calendar, and you'll see it's November. But now, this month may also be known as Movember, as men around the world grow a mustache for 30 days in order to raise awareness and funds to help find a cure for prostate and testicular cancer. According to the official website, the event began in 2003 in Australia and has been growing ever since. To join the movement and get a chance to win prize money, go to au.movember.com.
That's all for this week's Tort Weekly Edition. I'm Michael O'Neill.
And I'm Caitlin O'Brien. We'll be back next week with more news from in and around College Park. And don't forget, you can take us with you. Find our podcast at www.twe.umd.edu.
This has been TERP Weekly Edition, produced and written by students of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism in cooperation with WMUC Radio. Please join us next week at the same time for a look at the issues in and around the University of Maryland College Park.